Welcome back to another 25 High Pod. Oh, by the way, we're bringing back the podcast.
A little bit, at least until he moves back off to college.
Well, we're gonna try to keep it going at least when we can. Just to kind of start us off, I was trying to, the other day I thought about quitting YouTube, and then I thought, like, for whatever reason, it popped into my brain, and then a few minutes later, I was like, you know, I really want to just full-on dive into YouTube and, like, make it better. So I was like, what better way than to restart our podcast and put out more content for you guys, because that really fires me up for some reason.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. He said he thought about quitting YouTube, but he didn't even let his partner know that he even thought about it. Like, I hadn't thought about it at all. And then he...
Well, I thought about it for, like, 20 or 30 minutes. I'm going to put these down here just
That's
so.
Okay. But first, we would like to start off by thanking some of our partners in this, which is Native Sense.
Native Sense.
Huge partner in 25 High Outdoors. If you hadn't seen them before, check them out at NativeSenseLLC.com.
Yeah, if you type in just NativeSense.com, it comes up like a candle company or something from, I don't know.
Yeah, and then Threads Custom Bowstrings. And they are the best bowstrings on the market.
Quick about Native Sense, though, before we get off the subject. They're coming out with some really awesome stuff coming up. Like, if you like sweet corn, you're going to be really excited. If you like clear cuts or pine trees or cedar trees or dirt, you're going to be really excited about this.
Does people really love dirt?
Well, the people who love dirt call it soil.
Okay.
My FFA teacher always said that unless it's been, like, you're closed when they're dirty, that's dirt, that's dirty. But what you grow stuff in is soil. It's too good to be called dirt because it creates so much life. That's what my FFA teacher taught me.
We're always learning something new. But Threads Custom Bowstrings, if you want the best bowstrings that you can get on a bow, I suggest you check out Threads Custom Bowstrings. And going with that, Zach, you kind of just like, okay, so first off, this is completely unprepared. This is just us talking.
Yeah, I literally came to Case today and I was like,
We
want to film a podcast today? And he's like, no. And I was like, okay, we're going to do it.
So it is 11:15 at night. We just got back. We went and done some Bible study with my great uncle and my dad. And we just got back and Zach's like, I'm going to put this stuff together and we're going to record a podcast. And it's like, I got work in the morning, but I mean, okay, whatever.
The plan is to film a short podcast, which we're already off to a bad start on that.
Yeah. So let's try to regain ourselves. And Zach, like I said, anything I say tonight's coming off the hip. Just my first impressions, because I have not thought about anything at all. And Zach is going to lead us on a topic tonight, and we're going to talk about it for just a brief little while.
Yeah. So, first off.
Wait, hold up. So, our cups say Leupold. We are not sponsored by Leupold.
But if they
want
to reach out.
But if Leupold, if you want to reach out, let us know.
Because, or if you know somebody that works with them, I would love a free pair of binoculars.
Yeah,
something.
I need a new pair of binoculars. And, you know, I'm always in the need for a red dot or a scope.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
Every day.
Never mind. So, continue, Zach.
Okay. So, to start off, just to kind of talk about what we've been doing this summer and what our normal summer routine is, as you guys probably know if you've been watching for a while, we normally start out, the start of our year is October 15th, basically.
Yeah, hunting.
Yeah,
season.
It's opening day of Alabama hunting season, which I've been lucky enough that I've gone on technically a few trips. I've started my season early like once or twice, but either way, October 15th is really the start of our content year, if you so to speak. So our bread and butter basically is hunting, especially bow hunting, and especially in South Alabama. But for the summer months, there's no hunting really going on here. It's too hot for me to go out and chase pigs. I don't even know where pigs live around here. So, all we do is really fish. Well, the past couple of weeks, I've been really fired up. I've been kind of busy with family stuff and all, and I haven't been able to, like, really create the content I'd like to make. But I've been really fired up to go to some creeks and like some rivers, local rivers, and make some content there. And then we had a tropical storm hit. And not only did we have a tropical storm hit, we had, what, 6 days straight of rain? I may be exaggerating. I may be exaggerating a little bit.
Not much. By the time it's over, we're going to have around 10 days straight of rain.
Just about. Today it hasn't rained.
It's right. It rained a little bit, but not a whole lot.
Yeah.
But still, it's messing up. Even if it rains a quarter inch tomorrow, it's still not helping our situation with rain and fishing and stuff like that.
I drove to Bruton, and I've been wanting to float Murder Creek, and I don't know where to start or where to end. But I drove over Murder Creek because you have to get to Bruton if you go through East Bruton. And it's like, it looks like it's 10 feet higher than normal. And it looks like Yoo-Hoo.
Yeah, it's dark.
Yeah, it's rough. You can't fish anywhere with current right now. Even ponds are blown out. So fishing, even in ponds and lakes, it's a little bit thrown off with all this rain. But hopefully we can get out and get some fishing done. But I have actually done something I've never done that I've wanted to do for a while, and I finally actually set out and did it. And I went, so basically to kind of, there's a video that should be coming out before the podcast about this, but I went and I dumped out, well, first off, I went to a feed store and got some, I think it's dicalcium phosphate, I believe, and some feed salt or some stock salt. And what you can do with that is you can buy 100 pounds of that for about the same price as like two of those trophy rocks. And you can create like these giant mineral sites for like $35. And that's what I did. And I put out a little corn, and I've been getting ready for deer season. It's way too early for me. It's way too hot. But I've been bored, and I hadn't been able to fish it where I want to and like I want to. So I was like, I'm going to get ready for deer season. So
never too early to start. The only thing is about starting right now is you can put cameras out, but you have no idea what you're tracking at this moment because they're gonna have like 3 or 4 inches of horn. So
it ain't like,
yeah.
You can see
potential maybe in about 2 weeks you ought to be able to start seeing potential. 3 weeks probably. Y'all be able to start seeing potential and then move on from there. But you really won't see what you're going to have until the end of July, the couple weeks into August. You'll be able to start telling what you have on camera at that point. Unless you are one of those places you've had the same deer on camera for 3 or 4 years. And I have a few bucks like that, but still, with them only having 3 or 4 inches of horn right now, it's going to be almost impossible for me to recognize them.
Exactly.
I recognize characteristics in their rack. It's hard to tell by just looking at their bodies what bucks what. Unless, like, I have one on camera that's like 6, 7 years old that I've had. His name is Kalijah. And if I seen a picture of him right now, I'd probably be able to tell, but there's no way for certain.
See, I would almost bet $2 that you couldn't recognize him right now.
That's a pretty astounding bet coming from you.
So I've got, what I kind of want to say is I put out my mineral, and I'm very excited to see what happens, but the reason I put it out now has nothing to do, almost nothing to do with where or what I'm going to hunt in the fall, if that makes sense. Because I put out the mineral because our deer in the south, at least in South Alabama, deep south, the does haven't dropped their fawns, and they're not going to drop until like
bow season.
Just about bow season.
Or
like
after.
The earliest I've ever seen a doe drop around here is probably late August, early September.
I mean,
this
past deer season, I was still seeing spotted fawns in November. So that's because of our, I like to say, 3-cycle rut, because we have a rut in late February, late January, early February. Then we have a rut 30 days after that, and then there's going to be another rut 30 days after that.
And sometimes another one.
Yeah, and sometimes. Like, I seen – so, first opening day of turkey season –
This
wasn't covered on video. Opening day of turkey season this year, I was walking out. I was giving up. Done turkey hunting. It was about 9:30 in the morning. I was discouraged because I didn't hear any birds.
Might have been about the time, if you were in a deer stand, that you'd want a big buck to run by.
Yeah, because you'd be really ready to get down,
but you know you can't climb down yet.
And I just walked across the branch, waded through about, you know, shin deep water, and I was stopping for a second to fix my pant legs back, and I heard whoosh, whoosh, just running through the woods.
Yep.
And I was like, you know, I don't know what to expect at that moment. Like, I understand, like, if I see something running away from me, but this sound was getting louder, and it was coming toward me. And about 50 yards in front of me, a doe sprints through, across the road in front of me, and then... Legit, no lie. Like, you hear a lot of people, you talk about, you know, you see a buck, it happens fast. It was a lot bigger than what it looked like. But I'm telling you, this was a mature buck. Bigger buck than I seen all of deer season. Mm-hmm. Runs by me at 50 yards on the opening day of turkey season chasing a doe. So, welcome to South Alabama. Yep. Deer hunting. That's
got a lot to do with it.
You can't quantify that into how to hunt, because they're rutting steel during turkey season. And what was the date of May 20th? Was that the opening day?
I think this year it's May 20th.
Yeah. May 20th. Rutting bucks in May 20th. I mean,
March 20th.
March 20th, not May.
May 20th, I was coming back from Washington.
Yeah, May 20th, yeah.
Which, March. If you haven't watched those videos, go check them out.
Get those M's confused.
It's pretty easy to get them confused, to be honest. But I kind of wanted to just talk a little bit about summer strategy. And like we were just mentioning, I put out the mineral because the mineral, a lot of people think that, oh, it's calcium or it's protein, and I'm going to make my bucks grow a whole bunch of inches on their antlers, and all I'm worried about is killing a 140 in South Alabama, or I want to, that type of thing.
First off, let me just clarify this. If you are hunting in South Alabama, in my opinion, you can prove me wrong. I'd love to see the pictures.
I'm trying to prove you wrong one day.
But no, you can prove me wrong. Show me the pictures. Show me the data. Show me the dates. You can prove me wrong, drop us a pen. You are not going to attract Southern Alabama, or I would dare to say Florida deer, using a salt lick. You're wasting your time and money and efforts putting out salt licks, because our entire soil or dirt base is filled with salt due to the beach and the Gulf.
Yeah, and it's sand, so a lot of it just washes away, which I was really worried about that when I put out this stuff. And like I said, it's like I did a lot of research before I went into this, and I put a 50-50 mix of the fine stock salt to the dicalcium phosphate, roughly, which I mixed in a 5-gallon bucket with a shovel, so it's not precise. However, I did put out some corn to get them more attracted to it, and like I mentioned, I want my deer to be healthier, and I fully believe that there can be some benefit to putting out more nutrients into their lives, into their diet.
Nutrients are completely different. Like,
which that's why I didn't put out just salt, I put out dicalcium phosphate.
Yeah, it's okay. Like, you can add minerals and stuff. Like, I've put out mineral licks and stuff, and the deer around where I put them out hadn't paid attention to them at all. They'll walk right by them. The only thing my deer like is corn.
Your deer love corn, dude. like my deer like corn. My deer love corn, but his deer love corn.
Yeah, I mean, but we are primarily talking about lease hunters right now. Yeah. Obviously, you know, because we may dabble in public land. Him so more than me.
I do hunt public land a lot,
but we both are members of leases because. Even though there's a huge spawn of or a huge variety of public land local to us, if you want to kill bigger deer consistently in southern Alabama, you need to be a part of a lease.
Unless you're Kurt Manning.
Unless you're Kurt Manning.
Yeah, he's literally. We got to get him on a podcast.
He'll be on one of these before too long.
Yeah, very soon. I really want to talk. Two things I want to do with him is, number one, have him on a podcast and talk about, like, his which I've talked about him with him a bunch at the hunting camp and in the woods and stuff, but I really want to actually walk with him while he scouts, because he's offered to let me walk with him, and I've offered to take him to spots, but our schedules haven't lined up, but I really want to walk with him and scout with him in a spot, and also... After that, talk to him on a podcast.
Yeah, well, y'all don't know. If you don't know who Kurt Manning is, all you have to do is go back in our videos this past turkey season. It's a very short video. It's Florida, something like Turkey Down Florida Public Land, something like that. That's him. And then he's got a 6-point?
Yes, he killed a 6-point.
He's 6-point last deer season, and he's on a few other videos, and some fishing ones here recently. But he's not been a part of us very long. But he is what we would consider our uppermost level field staff, if we had to get one. He's one of our best friends.
Yeah,
he is what some podcast I've heard can call a local legend.
Oh yeah,
he's
probably the youngest local legend in our area. Like I know some old heads who might can out hunt him, but that's a mighty bold statement for a 29-year-old, isn't he? 29?
He just turned 30. Day before yesterday,
a couple days ago.
He is what in the truest sense is a outdoorsman. You can put him in any situation. And I'm not telling, like, for deer hunting, you can put him in any situation. He may not kill a deer because that opportunity may not present itself perfectly, but he is going to see deer and see a lot of them no matter what situation you put him in.
Yeah.
It's mind-blowing.
He went out to a chunk of public land not super far from here. You know the story, but just to tell... Sorry, I bumped the table. You know the story, and just so you guys know, he went to a new chunk of public land I didn't even know existed, but it's only a couple... within 2 hours of here. And he said... I want to say he hunted there 4 days, maybe three, and he saw decent bucks every time. He was just holding out for a real big one.
Yeah,
and it not just one or two decent bucks. It was like one decent buck every time, a couple small bucks, plus no telling how many does.
I
remember getting Snapchat, so it'd be like there's seven does walking by him, and then a buck chasing him.
Yeah, I mean he consistently finds good deer.
Okay, look, enough of us feeling sorry for ourselves because we're not that good.
Yeah, I wish I could. What's really funny is, like, I could go out there and work my tail off and find half the deer that he could walk out there and recognize sign and put up a camera and find 10 times the amount that I could just by his knowledge. And he's a really good person to listen to for the knowledge that he'll share. Now, he can't give away all of his secrets, but he can tell you a lot.
Explain a little bit more. How long has he been coming to the hunting camp? 2 years, maybe 3 years?
I mean, he's been coming and spending time at our hunting camp for 2 or 3 years, but I've known him for 10 at least.
And so I've known him pretty much since right before he started coming to the camp pretty often. Yeah. And I hunt a lot of the same ground he does as far as public land goes. And me and him talk a ton about public land because that's all he hunts. Just on one of the highest pressured chunks of public land, he killed 19 deer 1 year.
Yeah.
And
that was in Florida, right?
Yes, Florida. In Florida, he killed 19 deer back before they changed the laws. And he, so far, he has dropped me one pin. One pin.
It's secretive. Now he'll tell you a lot about how to strategy, but he won't tell you exactly, which is rightfully so.
Yeah, I understand the same, that. Like, I've dropped him about four pins.
Yeah.
In shape or one. Yeah. But anyway, enough of that. Enough of talking
about your 10 pins is worth one of his, though.
Yes. Yeah. I would agree with that. And just to kind of, one thing I wanted to kind of mention, which I've got like a bit of a plan in my head, but I don't know how it should come out. But one thing I did want to talk about a little bit is I'm very proud that I have worked to the level, at least back home, around home at our public land, I've gotten to the level where if I find a spot, like I can walk through a decent chunk of woods and eventually with a one or two or three scouting trips, I can find a spot where I can climb up during deer season and I can almost every time see deer. Or most of the time I can find a spot while I'm hunting. Like if I leave the camp at like 11 or noon and I'm like, I got this pin dropped, I want to go there and I'm going to scout around until I find a decent sign and climb up and I can find deer. I'm proud of that fact. However, Kurt Manning, just one last thing about him. He went to one of the highest pressured, lowest success rate chunks of public, found one deer running track, supposedly, and climbed up on that and killed a pretty nice deer.
Yeah, I believe it.
But anyway, the main point of this podcast, if you sat through this far, which I hope you have, we've only been recording for about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
The main point of this podcast is I want to talk about summer strategies for finding big bucks and dialing them in, as well as kind of going into better baiting strategies, because there's a really bad reputation for a lot of guys who bait up deer, and I feel like that term, bait up, it doesn't really apply to us, especially me. But you as well.
I utilize everything that is available to me in legal bounds.
Exactly.
And the thing is, I can tell you right now, and this is not any exaggeration, if you were going out there and you were just going to a random spot in the woods or into a food plot and throwing out 50, 60, 70, 80 to 300 pounds of corn at the time, you are, for one, wasting your time and money. For two, hurting the deer in a way. Mm-hmm. Because, what's the term for that? It starts with F.
Furlough. No, not furlough.
Anyway,
foundering.
Yes, that's, you're foundering deer if they eat that much.
If they eat too much grain, they turn really lethargic. They don't move as much, and their hooves can grow really long, and it hurts them from moving around and stuff.
It's very convenient to go do that because you only got to go pour out corn every, 2 weeks or so.
Something, but I might also add to that is if you pile up corn like you're saying,
it spoils faster.
And if it spoils, which corn, a lot of the wholesale corn that you buy already doesn't get tested for alpha toxin. Plus, if it molds, all it's doing is growing more alpha toxin. And that may not be a big deal for deer, but if turkeys come in there and eat it, I've heard that that it just straight up kills the turkeys, and I've also heard that it'll greatly reduce poult success rates. So, like,
which is very bad because Polk success rates are already like
already
one per 100.
Yeah, roughly. Yeah. Yeah, it's turkey. The bet. Yeah, that's yeah. Don't pile up your corn.
Yeah, the best way to feed is also the hardest way to feed. Is you go throw in a small backpack full every 2 to 3 days.
Yeah, and not just dump it out.
You broadcast. There's a video. It. You grab it and you throw it out and you walk around. You cover a 20 to 30 square yard area,
yeah,
of 10 to 15 pounds of corn.
Exactly. And just to kind of get back to what we originally started talking about, I put out the mineral. I've heard a lot of people say that that most of the time when deer hit mineral, they'll come by, they'll lick it, and then they'll kind of ease off. Which I put corn out on my mineral for literally no other reason than to get the deer to know that the mineral's there. And just to kind of, well, before we back up anymore, it's worked. And I've had my cameras out for 6 days, and I've got, I want to say, 600 pictures, I think I've got around 800 pictures, because I had 500 and something on one, 200 and something on another, and then around 100 on another. What's that, 900? They've been out 6 days.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, and they were set on 15-second delay, which I didn't know if that was going to be...
If you would have had 5-second delay, you'd have 1,500 pictures.
Yeah. But anyway, the point of my mineral, there's two reasons. So, number one is I'm trying to make my herd healthier, and number two is they're put in areas that I know deer already are, which we'll definitely talk about that in a minute, and that I want to see what effect it has on one buck in particular. So I've had a picture of a buck. I'm going to try to play the video, which is not a super high quality video, but I'm going to try to play the video over this podcast. If you're listening, if you're not listening, it's a really, or if you're not
watching,
if you're watching, you can see the video. If you're not, if you're listening and not watching, it's a wide 7-point last year. I've got 3 years of history with him. This will be the fourth year of me knowing about this deer and the first year that I'm actually going to try to kill this deer. And for 2 years, I saw him twice on the hoof. And he was 400 yards away plus on a pipeline, crossed the pipeline. I knew it was the same deer. I saw him twice that year. The next year, I got a bunch of pictures of him. And then this past year, I got a handful of pictures and a couple game cam videos of him. And he's a real wide 7-point with real short tines. Now, if nothing else, I'd like for him to grow maybe one more tine and maybe a little bit more mass. But honestly, he's a 6-year-old deer this year, roughly. He could be 5, he could be 8, for all I know. He's definitely not 4, because the first year I saw him, like, he was a good buck that I'd be happy to shoot.
It's really easy to judge deer's age from yearling to 3 or 4, and then it becomes hard to around here, because I've killed deer that have the rack of a 5-year-old around here, but were 3, and I've also killed deer that had the rack of a 3-year-old that was 7.
Yeah.
So
it's like you have to up in the corner. He's what, 120?
He was 118, and he's
three and a quarter.
And
he should have been 3.5 the year you killed him.
Yeah,
is what he looked like.
And then my dad kills a buck that's slightly bigger, that looks very identical to him.
You talking about Dirty Elvis?
No, I'm talking about this one that's actually sitting in his chair in front of us. It's slightly bigger. He scored 124 inches. That is 5.5. Now, this is all aged by a taxidermist that has 30 plus years of experience. And then he my dad also kills Dirty Elvis. That is a 128 inch deer. That's 4.5 years old.
Yeah.
It's almost impossible. You can get close plus or minus a year.
Yeah. And not to get too sidetracked with that velvet buck right there. Number one, the first thing I want to mention is we were talking about the super late rut earlier. I personally feel like our super late rut leads to a lot of bucks keeping velvet longer, which is something I'm really excited about because I didn't get to target a specific buck last year because of college and all. Hopefully this year will be different. But I didn't get to target a specific buck. And then 2 years ago, I shot my velvet buck because of our late rut.
3 years ago, our very first video ever posted is my velvet buck.
Yeah. And if you want to go back and watch those, just scroll back or just type in velvet Alabama buck.
Both of them should come up.
And that deer was 4.5, but he looks like, I mean, he wouldn't score 90 inches probably.
Yeah, and I never got mine aged, but he was old. He was pot belly.
Oh, yeah.
He was his rack's nothing to write home about, but he's a 6 point, and he's all velvet South Alabama buck. Very proud of him.
In the video,
I would say he was north of 5.
In the video, he looks old, and didn't you say he weighed about 160?
160, 170. It's just been a long time.
Yeah, because, and just a lot of our 120 inch, or sorry, a lot of our 3.5 year old bucks weigh around 120 pounds, maybe 130. On my lease, almost every deer I've killed except for one or two has been around 120 pounds.
Yeah, it seems like my deer end up being about 10 pounds heavier.
Yeah.
But the thing is it's amazing how much mine and Zach's deer change on our leases. And we're only, 7-8 miles as a crow flies?
I don't even think it's that far. Our deer are very different.
Yeah.
Which I would say a lot of it has to do with pressure and the lay of the land, because my land is a lot thicker. And we have a little bit more pressure, but also, and we don't feed as much, but also.
Well, we have a very in-depth feed program for our deer. And we can do, if you're interested in hearing more about that, y'all let us know, and we'll do more of a breakdown of the feed process. And when I say feed process, I count corn, but it's other things as well.
Which, that's kind of what I wanted to talk about this episode, is like, mine and your strategies are very similar, but also a little bit different, especially this year because I'm trying a new tactic. And that's kind of what I wanted to get into, is how to take your baiting from throwing out corn and hoping for the best in a spot that you want to kill a deer to actually maximizing the output that you get in from actually paying for all that corn and going and putting it out.
Yeah, so one thing that I'll tell you right now as far as putting corn out is, yes, you can walk into anywhere out in the woods and throw corn out anywhere and deer will find it. But it's not about that. You have to go put in the work. And luckily, you know, I've been at my lease since I was 12 years old. I know where deer move in it 99% of the time. Is there some areas that I've missed? I'm sure there is. But
yeah, that's one thing I'm getting into is actually, because my whole life I've just sat in food plots mostly and listened to my dad talk, and the past couple of years, pretty much since we started filming, is when I got out of my comfort zone, started climbing, and started getting out into the woods a little bit more.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm still kind of learning, even though I've been on my lease longer than you've been on yours.
Yeah. The thing you got to do is you have to find deer's natural movement paths, where they travel, and then implement corn within that arena.
Exactly.
Because what happens is, well, for one thing, you get results faster from it. You'll see what deer in that area faster, because if you put a camera out for about 4 days over any type of bait, you will know what deer are within that vicinity. Within 4 days, you'll know what deer is within that vicinity. So you have to implement that corn very strategically, or any other bait that you may choose, and put it in their natural path. That way you don't disrupt the deer's natural movements, because when you disrupt deer's natural movement, that's when they become more nocturnal.
And deer, more wary of what's going on. Yeah. Even if they're coming in every day, if they get one whiff of that human scent, then that's when they really become nocturnal.
Contrary to popular belief, deer are not naturally nocturnal creatures at all.
Yeah.
They are daytime creatures. They have adapted to nocturnal.
According to science, it's diurnal. I want to say, or I don't know what the word is, but it naturally deer are supposed to have their maximum amount of movement
around the
hours of dusk.
Yeah, dusk.
Like just all times of the year, naturally, the highest percentage that they move within any given day is the hour before until the hour after sunset or sunrise. So that's what the deer's natural movement is. And with less pressure, they move more. With more pressure, they move less. And if you start baiting them in the wrong spots and blowing them out of the bait sites and running into their bedding areas and driving trucks through the woods and side-by-sides through the woods and stuff, that's what really turns them off of that. They're still going to move during the day, but from what I've heard from a lot of guys who aren't public, just listen to other podcasts and stuff, it's like they stay tighter to their bedding areas during the day, and their movement away from that just really shrinks during the day when you start blowing them out a bunch.
Another thing, side note, if my opinion again, 100% my opinion. If you're driving a side-by-side or an ATV in your lease, you are messing up. Going away from that, you have to put your – if you have any questions, comment down below. But if you have to implement your feed in a deer's natural transition areas, travel corridors – that type of area. If not, you're going to disrupt their normal travel patterns, and you have to learn how to hunt them deer on their natural. I like to refer to when you feed a trail, I like to refer to that more as a, like, and if you go back in our videos, you'll hear me refer, I call it pause time.
Yeah.
And the reason I call it pause time, because them deer are just naturally traveling through there. And of course they smell it before they get there, but they're browsing, they're moving through the travel corridors, and it pauses them just long enough. They'll stick their head down to eat just a few kernels of corn or whatever you throw down in there. And that allows, especially a bow hunter, more time to evaluate their situations to be able to put more of a clean and ethical shot upon them.
Yeah.
That just pause time. Just slow them down.
Which, no matter where you put out corn, even if it's on a natural deer habitat or natural deer transition trail, whatever, you're still going to change some deer's patterns. But
yes,
those deer are a lot harder to kill than deer if they were already on their natural patterns.
Yeah.
So, just to, one thing, back a few years ago, not very long ago, like the year that I killed the Velvet Six, first off, I put corn in one spot that I really wanted to kill a deer. And like I mentioned earlier, it was a spot that I wanted to kill a deer, not necessarily where the deer was. And it took me about a week and a half, 2 weeks to get a picture of a buck. And when I got a picture of a buck, it was a buck that I wanted to go after. It ended up being the Velvet Six that I shot. It's on video. Well, what ended up happening was I had the mindset at the time, which one of my downfalls is when I do put out corn and do put out bait and do start getting focused on one deer, I kind of have tunnel vision, and then either I stick with that one deer and forget about everything else, or I shoot that deer and then don't know what to do with the rest of the season, which is what happened when I shot the Velvet Six.
I've been on both sides of that. That's the reason whenever I feed or whenever I'm running cameras. Like, so this is June the 23rd as we record this. I'll probably implement a small amount of feeding and putting cameras out at next month, mid month. And I will start, when I go out there to put cameras out and stuff, I'm going to start from anywhere from 15 to 20 cameras. I am going to run. When I go out there, it may take me 2 days to check and at all of those areas. And I'm talking about on 1,400 acres. So, you know, roughly a camera per 80, 90 acres. Yeah. And
which I would venture to guess that your deer move a little bit more than mine do. They have a little bit wider range.
I've
seen it on your lease where you put cameras 100 yards to the right and cameras in corn 100 yards to the right. Get
completely
road,
different
and
animals.
100 yards to this yeah. side of the road. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, last year I got a buck on camera. I call him Nomad. Because between me and another guy on our lease, we have him covering every single bit of that 1,400 acres. And our club isn't very wide. It's very long. I mean, it's over, I don't know, 3 miles long.
Yeah. And
but it's not very wide.
A mile and a half, 2 miles wide.
Yeah. And that buck covered every single corner of our club.
So,
and most bucks, in my experience, have a core area of about 200-300 acres.
Yeah, I mean a lot of bucks do have a smaller home range. But what I'm kind of doing is very opposite of that this year, which normally I would be on a very similar page. You go find spots that there's already deer. You distribute your corn. You don't pile it up.
Broadcast
that corn. You don't pile it up. But what I'm trying to do a little bit different this year is I've got three areas that I know there should be one big deer that should, at the very least, come check out that mineral site enough to help them out a little bit. And then what I'm going to do from that is I've got these three main sites. And then once it gets into September, August or September, when they start kind of transitioning into those fall patterns, which they don't really fully transition until mid-October, about the time season comes in, is about the time the velvet comes off, and about the time they turn into a completely different animal, about the time the pressure starts hitting, and all those things kind of combine.
So I guarantee you, October 15th to the end, October 31st, you have a chance. November 1st, they become a completely different breed of animal.
Exactly. And that's kind of what I'm thinking is, I'm going to try to focus my efforts, which I don't plan on going back and checking these cameras until possibly mid-July, late July, maybe even early August, because that mineral is going to last a long time.
Even if it gets rained on consistently, it's going to absorb into the dirt, and
the deer sit there and paw it up. So I've got the mineral out, like I've mentioned multiple times, just to help my herd out, help my deer out a little bit, see if it makes any kind of difference. Even if it doesn't, I might leave it out there to see if it's a long-term thing. I might keep a mineral site for a few years to see if it's kind of a long-term kind of deal. But anyway, what I want to do from that is, let's say I've got a buck coming in, which their patterns aren't going to really change. Like, I've got daylight pictures of bucks, like, super consistent right now, but it's also June. And that's also corn there. And it's also, I mean, no pressure, all that. So what I'm going to do is, once it gets into late August, early September, when they start to adjust their patterns around, and they start to kind of get into those fall patterns, that's when I'm going to start, like, backtracking bucks and trying to really dial in their core range, dial in where I can actually kill them. And I'm going to implement no corn and corn, because last year I didn't use a single grain of corn on my lease, and I had three opportunities at good bucks, and I shot one of them, and I should have killed the other two. I shot two of them, actually. I don't mind saying that I made a terrible shot. My scope got knocked off, and I probably pulled the shot. I did the classic back slap on one of them. But either way, that was 100% scouting and putting out cameras with no corn. So I'm just thinking, if I have a little bit of mineral, a little corn out, maybe I can up my odds.
Yeah, I mean, like I was saying, it's I'll start when I put stuff out. I'll start with, you know, 15 to 20-ish cameras. But by the time October 15th runs around, I'm going to be operating less than six. Yeah. Six. I'll have two or three bucks in mind for potential targets, hit listers, whatever you want to call them. And that's the bucks that I'm going to have cameras oriented around finding. There'll be less cameras where I feel more confident about the deer that I'm hunting, and there'll be more cameras where I feel less confident about. And when I say that, I'll have a camera over, if I'm not very confident about it, I'll have a camera over a food source, whether that be corn, food plot, whatever you put out. And then I'll have a couple cameras falling up surrounding areas just to hope them on trails, hoping to catch them coming by, working that area.
Especially if you've got like one central spot there, you think like, hey, this is where I think I'm going to kill this deer. It's mm-hmm. coming right out of a branch bottom. There's a line of oaks coming right out of this branch bottom. There's like this thicket, whatever it may be. You're like, I feel like I'm really going to kill this deer here. Well, on one situation, you start getting that deer 10 minutes, 15 minutes before last light, super consistently. The other hand is you get him right around dark there once or twice a week, and then this other spot that you didn't have as much as hope somehow happens to be super appealing to that deer, and that's the spot that you're actually going to go.
I'll bring it back to our first year of filming Mohican. I missed that buck at 34 yards. Y'all, if you've been with us long enough, you know the story. I missed that buck.
Right over there.
Yeah, you can't. He's just off camera, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, I missed that buck at 34 yards the first or second weekend of deer season. I can't. I'd have to look at the
dates.
It
was really early. I know.
Yeah,
that.
And then I missed him, and then he stopped showing up to that area anywhere during daylight. I mean, he was consistent. He was every day at 4:30 coming into that area every single day until I missed him. Then he continued to come there, but it was after dark, got later and later.
Oh, what, so one thing that's crazy, I don't know if it ever came into the video, but the day that you missed that deer, didn't he show up like 10 minutes after you climbed down?
Like 10 or 15. He came back after dark.
It blew my mind. That's just a funny and, or a fun fact, I guess.
It proves that bow hunting really doesn't have an impact, but he was smart enough to realize that he didn't need to come back during the day. Because that's really the only time that they're actively after, something's actively after them other than coyotes, pretty much. But anyway, I dedicated 5 cameras to that deer. After I was, and you're talking about, I probably only owned like 8 cameras at that point. And I took them, and I knew he was coming from a certain way. And I took 5 cameras, and I put them on 5 different trails. And I moved them every 3 days for about 3 weeks. And I moved them to different trails every 3 days until I found where he was walking through. And then I kept it on there. And whenever I found the trail he was working it every single day for like 4 or 5 days in a row before I started hunting him. And I hunted him on a – I hunted him Monday, Tuesday. I hunted him – be more precise. I hunted him Monday morning, Tuesday morning, Wednesday morning and evening – Thursday morning, Friday morning and evening, Saturday evening, Sunday morning, and killed him on Sunday evening. When you find a deer, I mean, I understand, I have a job, I mean, you have jobs. The thing is, when you find that deer that's worth spending your vacation days or worth spending every second you can in the woods, you have to spend every second. You can't be scared to scare that deer off. Obviously, you have to observe wind, but that's the great thing about a climber. That buck was coming in through one area. 99% of the time, when they're not in rut, they're going to be coming down the same trail, and you move with your climber and or saddle to different trees.
Shoot, even on the ground.
Or on the ground, and you get where the wind is right, observing to what trail they come from. And you just move around. Like, I mean, I climbed two or three different trees hunting that same deer, depending on the wind, because he was working that same trail. He was going to come within, he was going to walk through a bottom within a 30-yard radius. And I knew he was going to walk through that bottom. I just had to be in a tree at the right place at the right time. So you, if you find the right buck, it's worth spending those days off. It's worth spending those vacation days. To, if it's that to you, if you're listening this far in this podcast, it's worth it to you. You spend those vacation days. You go hunt that deer. You go spend as much time as you can in a tree. I don't believe in that. You hunt, if you hunt a area every single time you go hunt, and you'll eventually bump them off just based off pressure. No, if you hunt smartly and climb trees depending on what way the wind's blowing, you're not going to scare that deer off.
And no matter what, if that wind's blowing the direction he's coming, you won't see him.
Yeah, you won't see him. He's going to smell something. He'll move on his way. He'll do a different path that day.
Yeah.
I may have done that. I could have killed him earlier if I would have been smarter in a certain way.
Yeah.
But it ended up working out. You have to dedicate. There is no substitution for time in the tree when you find that correct deer and understand he's coming here. He is going to come here. The only thing that, the only reason he is not coming here is because he smells you up there, and you just have to be smarter than the wind, which I'm frankly shouldn't be that hard.
And just to kind of give another example of very similar thing, is
that's come from somebody that only killed one buck last year.
Yeah, I only killed one buck. Yeah, too.
I know how to hunt. Do as I say, don't do as I do. Because sometimes I get on it, and I don't care. Like, sometimes I gain that attitude when I find buck. I'm either going to kill him or I'm going to run him into the next county.
That's kind of how I am this year with that wide 7, which I hope turns into something a little bit better. But hopefully I get a couple good beads on a couple bucks, plus hopefully I kill one or two or seven on public land. I didn't say that.
Three.
So, which is a very similar scenario was that Velvet 6 that we talked about earlier. I didn't get to finish my story because I was really interrupted.
You've done that a couple times.
I agree.
But so, we probably need to be wrapping this up.
Yeah, we'll wrap up pretty soon. So that Velvet 6, like I mentioned, I found a spot that I wanted to kill that buck in, and he was coming in pretty consistent, and then he started changing up his pattern. And basically what I had to do was, I thankfully had the mindset to do so, was to move my corn around, move my bait sites around, and move cameras around until I found a spot where he felt extra comfortable getting there. And one of the best, before you interrupt
me, I legit don't mean to interrupt, but if you hear background sounds of a train, that's because one's about to go by.
Yeah, there's a train. But anyway, so that buck, basically, I had to move my corn and my cameras around on different. I knew he was walking up and down the edge of this creek. I just had to find out what area of the creek that he actually lived on. And when I did, it ended up being honestly super easy to actually kill him. But the whole work, the work that I put into finding that spot where he lived to actually go in there and kill him super easy, that was tough. I was out there every weekend from early July.
Go ahead. Just a train.
Yeah. I was out there every weekend from early July until the weekend before season. And I put in a lot of work to find that spot that deer felt the most comfortable. And when I did, that's when it all came fairly easy. All I had to do at that point was put in a perfect shot. And you might think, well, all you did was go out there and shoot him, which I kind of had that same feeling. But when I think back on it, I did put in a whole bunch of work. And that's like this year, that's basically my plan, is I'm going to start out with these smaller centralized locations in the areas that I know these bucks should live, and then eventually, hopefully early September, late August, I'm going to go out there, distribute my corn, put it around, and figure out these core locations of these bucks, and then that's when I'm going to strike. And don't go into your bait sites when the wind's bad, because all you're doing is hurting yourself and ruining the chances of those deer coming back into that bait and being calm.
Yeah, but I mean, if you spray enough native scents on your boots and cover scents, you ought to be okay.
You should be.
Yeah. What my favorite thing is to do is you spray scent killer on you, whatever form or fashion you like. It all is pretty much the same. It's all enzyme eating scent killer stuff.
Most of it's just baking soda.
Yeah. And then you take native scents, deception, spray it on your boots, which is just basically doe urine. And it's 100% farm fresh natural doe urine. Then you take it, spray it on your boots, and then you take their new, whether it be sweet corn, pines, cedar,
or dirt,
whatever's native to your
soil.
Area.
I prefer soil.
Soil, dirt, and then you spray that on your outfit. You ought to be good to go. Wind ought not be an issue at that point.
Yeah, but even if it is,
but it's always smart to hunt the wind.
So what's your summer plan? Just what's your? I know we've talked a lot about the baiting strategy and what we do when we bait, but is your summer plan basically just gonna be the same?
My summer plan is wrapped up pretty simply. When I tell you, when I put cameras out, it's gonna be covering as much ground as possible. With 1,400 acres, I plan on putting 15 to 20-ish cameras out. I have to look and recount how many I have, and might buy a couple more. And I'm going to put as many cameras as I have covering as many areas that I have personal experience in already. Keeping it there for 2 to 3 weeks, seeing what is in that area, and I may move them slightly from tree to tree, but in that same area. And then I'll eventually weed out the areas that I know that I don't see any mature deer in, and then I may move them. And by October the 1st, I will be narrowed down more than likely to about 6-7 cameras-ish, and I will solely focus on 2 to 3 deer.
Yeah, okay. I like that strategy. And I'm going to say this before we completely shut down. I'm going to have a super similar strategy to that on public if I can get the cameras to do so. I'm not going to put out corn on public, obviously, because it's not
legal. That's illegal. That's illegal.
A little bit, yeah. I'm not going to put out corn, but I listened to a Southern Outdoorsman podcast recently where a dude was talking about trolling for bucks. And, you know, when you troll for fish, you turn your trolling motor on 3 or 2 or 5, whatever you want to do. You cast your bait out really far behind you, and you just go. And basically, the point of trolling when you're fishing is to cover as much water as possible and put that bait in front of as many fish as possible until one finally is dumb enough to hit it. Well, I'm going to do something very similar on public land if I can, because hopefully there's, you know, the chunk of public land I really want to hunt starts with a certain letter that looks like a number, and that's all I'm going to say. And it's hilly, and I love it to death, even though it gets so much freaking pressure. I love it so much. But I want to go out there and put out a whole bunch of cameras and find, I just want one or two or three pictures of a decent buck. And then I'm going to backtrack that buck, or I'm going to put out like a big circle around that area and try to figure out what area that deer really spends a lot of his time. And hopefully I can dial in that on the days that I can't come home the weekends that I can't come home, or the days that I have a little bit more free time and I can actually travel a little bit and go hunt, I really want to do something very similar to what you're doing without corn on public. But then on private, I've already mentioned it a few times. I just to kind of recap, I've got a handful of main spots, and basically my trolling, it's very similar strategy, except instead of putting out a whole bunch of cameras, I'm trying to attract those deer to these small areas for now. And then as the season progresses, I'm going to focus on those other areas that the deer are coming from and kind of put out my wide net of cameras, hopefully, around that area. And, yeah, basically backtrack those bucks from the baiting sites back to closer to their bedding areas or whatever. And that's kind of my strategy. Public, I'm going to put out a whole bunch of cameras, do something very similar to what you're doing without corn. Private, I'm kind of trying to keep it more concise, but also eventually I'm going to expand and then hopefully decrease, kind of like you're saying.
Yeah, I'm going to cover as much ground as possible while it's still summer, pretty much, and then narrow it down as closer we get to deer season. Covering areas that I know deer are in. And then, as if nothing happens there, then I'll start moving to different areas. Mm-hmm. But I think that's about going to wrap us off. But I will like to say, if you have made it to this point of our podcast, you ought to really check out our hats. That is the Casual Countryman.
It's one of my favorite hats that we've produced.
I am wearing the Hollywood Hunter. I don't know how well you can see it, but check it down in the link below. We'll wear that in the next one.
All right.
But check it down, link below. Check out our hats. And if you have made it to this point in our podcast, I'm going to give y'all a special deal. If you go in there and you buy a hat, or a decal, we have decals, I will add you a discount code in. It's called the Real Ones, all in lowercase, for 15% off your order.
I didn't know about this till right now. Yeah. I might have to use that discount code.
Yeah. He don't get them for free. I pay for them. He pays for them. So it's all about spreading the word and helping out us to make content. Every dollar you spend with us goes into this. It ain't like we're trying to make a living. Yeah. It goes off to producing better content. He just broke his camera tonight. Yeah. Help us buy him a new camera so he can video.
Or at least fix it. I mean, it still works right now, but I would at least like
it's working, but he broke the screen on it. But
we're
anyway,
about right at an hour, which yeah. I think is really good for our first podcast in like 7 years.
Yeah, okay. But anyway, the code, the Real Ones, all together, lowercase. He'll pop it up on the screen in editing.
Yeah, I'll pop it up right here. Right?
That's for 15. That's a 15%. 15% off your order, and we really appreciate it. And check them out. That is decals and hats. We are working on apparel. Stay tuned for more.
And if you want us to cover different topics in this podcast, drop it in the link in the description.
Comments. It is late, guys. It's 12:15. I'm ready to go to bed.
I've been ready to go to bed, but I was fired up to do a podcast. Either way, and click the like button. Click the subscribe if you want to see more, or if you want to see how our summer strategies turn out through our videos, just go click the subscribe button.
And right now, we
red, it's the wrong color. That's what my boy Yakpack says.
Yeah, and we are posting a good amount of fishing content right now, so check that out as well.
I got a fishing video and a hunt starting video. I got the video that I'm talking about right now, basically. Yeah.
So stay tuned, and always remember to live life
25 feet high.